Here next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we're talking about the news. Mostly, we will wave goodbye to Canada's biggest media export.
I'm less popular in my own neighborhood than I am anywhere else in the world. Literally.
Yeah. Jordan Peterson is done with Canada. But is Canada done with Jordan Peterson? Wait for that. Welcome back to the show. YouTuber who has just crested 1 million subscribers. Congratulations. Welcome back, JJ McCullough.
Thanks for having me back.
JJ, do you pay close attention to the real estate market here in Canada?
Maybe a little bit in Vancouver, not so much where you guys are.
Oh, well, everything's about Toronto. Not just Toronto, but actually the west side of downtown Toronto, which is where I will bring your attention. I want to bring your attention towards a listing on MLS, realtor.ca, for a home. Actually just sold the other day for slightly above asking. Can you click on this link here?
68 Olive Avenue. Yeah, it looks nice.
Let's have a look at these pictures here. This is in Seton Village.
Is that a swanky part of Toronto?
It's an affluent part of downtown Toronto. What's this house going for? This is semi-detached, $2.2 million. This isn't like a mansion, but it's nice. It's a little bit cookie-cutter looking in terms of the finishes. Until you get to the third floor. Check out the third floor here.
Yeah, it looks pretty sweet with this nice arched wood ceiling, nice views.
Here's how it's described. The Showstopper, a third-floor loft retreat that feels plucked from a Muskoka escape. Vaulted ceilings, wood beams, and natural reclaimed textures evoke a lakeside cabin right here in the heart of Toronto. Downstairs, the lower level becomes a private wellness zone. JJ, this was the home of Dr. Jordan Peterson.
Oh my, the doctor himself. Wow, he sure lives well, Jesse.
You build a house, then maybe you can live in it. If you don't build a house, you're not going to be able to live in it. If you build a good house, then you'll be able to live in a good house. And if you build a perfect house, then maybe you can live in a perfect house.
Yeah, a private wellness zone does not sound very Dr. Jordan Peterson-y, but he had a private wellness zone. I think he once described the attic, like he said he built a indigenous longhouse in his own home.
I've applied for sabbatical and I'm going to have some time. And because of this massive construction project that I've been engaged in my house, because I put basically a Native American longhouse on the ceiling of my house, believe it or not. Maybe one day I'll walk you through that if you'd be interested.
One thing I notice is missing, though, Jesse. Didn't Jordan Peterson famously, like, decorate his home with, like, Stalinist propaganda posters to remind him never again?
In 2001, in a fit of manic collective insanity, I decided to start seeing if I could find Soviet-era artifacts online, mostly through eBay. They remind me how powerful ideology can be and how many different pathways it can take to control. And if we forget it, then we're likely to repeat it.
I don't see any of those in the listing.
This has been staged. It's interesting that there's nothing in here that would let you know this was Jordan Peterson's home. Some homes go at a premium because a big celebrity lived there. I think that they're trying to eradicate the memory. Really, it's Stalinist revisionism. You would not know that Jordan Peterson lived here. I think that this is not the boom, this is the echo. I think he left Canada some months ago.
Dad, welcome to my podcast.
Thanks for the invitation.
And welcome to moving to America formally.
I guess that's what happened, isn't it?
Jordan Peterson no longer is a Canadian resident. Did you hear about this?
I did hear this. Moving to Arizona, is that right?
Yeah, I did look around in Google Maps in his new neighborhood in Arizona. You really could not imagine a more different community. Paradise Valley. Arizona.
Ooh.
And so very beautiful, like the cliffs, the landscapes are amazing, but the way of living, it's like gated communities and massive homes. To get to your neighbor's house, you got to go for like a 5-minute walk. I don't know where he lives in Paradise Valley, but it's very different than living in downtown. Even in an affluent part of downtown Toronto, you are part of a community. There's lots of different people in that community. He will not have to deal with that anymore. Going over the coverage of Jordan Peterson's exit from Canada, I'll share what we know about this. Back in December, the Toronto Star reported on Jordan Peterson's move, and the headline is, "It's become uncomfortable for me." Jordan Peterson, the controversial psychologist, moves from Toronto to the U.S. He said,
I'm less popular in my own neighborhood than I am anywhere else in the world, literally.
I don't live in Seton Village, but I don't live far. I think I live close enough that you could call me his neighbor, and I can confirm this. Nobody likes him. It would be uncomfortable for Jordan Peterson to walk down the street. I think that people would look at him and first be like, oh, isn't that Jordan Peterson? Oh, yeah, I hate that guy. I think that that would get on you. That would get on your nerves, especially if you are a figure as internationally famous and as popular and have millions of people, 10 million books sold for his first book. Yeah, why am I living here where people don't like me? He also cited his issue with the College of Psychologists of Ontario.
An Ontario court says the province's College of Psychologists had the authority to tell Peterson to take social media training or face possible disciplinary action.
So it's actually an indefinite sentence, conditional only on what? On what? On what? My compliance? By what standard? To cap it all off, a social media communication expert. Who the hell is that?
It followed complaints about some of Peterson's online posts.
Remember this one?
Yes, who could forget?
He lost his fight. They censured him. This is the regulator that makes sure that psychologists are acting in psychologist-y ways. And it has to do with specific social media posts. I remember a few. I remember one where there was like a plus-size model on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and he said,
Yeah.
Not beautiful.
Yes.
There was one in which he joked on Twitter about this guy who was complaining about overpopulation of the earth was free to leave the earth at any time, I guess by killing himself. Not a great thing, maybe, for a psychologist to be joking about. I think that was what was suggested by Jordan Peterson. And there was another one where, what did he say about Elliot Page? Do you remember?
Something about Elliot Page, and it's like, you know, the doctors that, like, mutilated you or something. You know, he did some very transphobic kind of thing.
Peterson said the doctor who removed Page's breasts was a criminal. Another was directed toward a former Ottawa City councillor who uses they-them pronouns, describing Catherine McKinney as, quote, an appalling, self-righteous, moralizing thing.
Now, that's not how he characterized that. This is how he described his battle with the Ontario College of Psychologists on a podcast appearance.
My crimes are exposing the climate apocalypse narrative fraud on Joe Rogan, and that's looking pretty good at the moment, given that I'd say half the world's population in the West now knows that the climate apocalypse narrative is nothing but a pathological, faithless, globalist WEF scam. I took Elliot Page, Ellen Page, to task for parading her new chest on her social media platform and enticing unfortunately deluded and terribly suffering young women into barbaric surgery. I criticized Trudeau and a number of his compatriots on grounds that I think are incontrovertible.
Is this a form of communism?
Well, it's a form of authoritarianism, certainly.
I'm glad that he tempered that. Maybe it's not communism. He's been rattling on about this as this is a battle on my very civil liberties, on my speech. This is policing of my opinions. My understanding of the college's position is that to have a license to practice psychology means that people should feel safe with you, whether they're plus-sized or transgender or dealing with suicidal ideation. And if a psychologist makes certain comments that would make people feel unsafe, then we rip their license from... No, they did not even determine that he was going to lose his license. They said, you've got to take a class.
Mm.
That's what this was about. And his response is, I'm leaving Canada. That's how he deals with this. And one thing I want to note about this chapter in the saga of Jordan Peterson is it really puts the lie to Peterson's self-description that he's a Canadian citizen trying to make Canada better. Right, which we've seen as a strain throughout it, that he was going to push back on the university from a principled stand to try to reform the university. I think there was even talk, like he talked about, he was thinking about running for office.
I have had discussions, serious discussions with people about a political career.
He's been a constant gadfly to Justin Trudeau. And I think that the question that I've had throughout this is this guy in good faith engaging with Canadian culture and politics? Or is he just looking for symbolic punching bags because he's really driven by like a more global ideological crusade and Canada is a symbol for him that he can take shots at? And I think we have our answer, because if you, because it's not a very Canadian thing. If ultimately you're like, well, f- you guys, I'm taking my ball and I'm leaving the country forever, I would question the extent to which we were ever wise to consider you a fellow citizen that we were working through these issues with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like I broadly agree with what you're saying. I mean, just as someone who has been routinely told to leave Canada myself because of the things that I believe and say, maybe I do have a little bit of sympathy. But on the other hand, I agree with what you said. It seems to me that Jordan Peterson has never really been interested in Canadian stuff, in Canadian politics, in Canadian issues, except to the extent that when he's on some American podcast, he can speak of Canada as this symbol of a certain kind of dystopian, progressive society that America must never want to be like.
We've set up a situation in Canada where the people who select their judges have to go a kind of indoctrination that has no validity from a scientific perspective before they're allowed to select our judges.
I think Jordan Peterson much more easily fits into the slot of just an ambitious Canadian who was not able to achieve his full ambitions in Canada just because all of the great sort of culture-producing institutions on this continent happen to exist on the American side of the border. So as we know, Jordan Peterson has been going on podcasts. He has his own show on what is it, on the Daily Wire, right? He's speaking at all of these sort of young Republican conferences and CPAC and this kind of thing in the States. Like, it's pretty clear that for a while now, his meal ticket has been coming from the U.S. That's where the market demand for what he has to offer is. And that's, again, not even necessarily just an ideological thing. There's just a hell of a lot more Americans than there are Canadians. So if you're in any sort of entertainment adjacent industry, which, you know, I'm sorry to say, political punditry is, it just behooves yourself to relocate to the place where you've got the biggest support network so you don't have to constantly be doing border crossings all the time and having to constantly explain to the border guard why you're going to live and work. I mean, one can only imagine, Jesse, the visa issues he's had over the years.
We were holding him back. I hear you. He wasn't able to realize his full potential because he was a Canadian. I don't know. I think he did pretty well, but I do want to talk with you about his ambitions. And it's been a while since I've actually checked in with the Jordan Peterson story. And there's some interesting stuff that's been uncovered. All right, stick around because after the break, we will trace the mythic arc of Jordan Peterson and his ambitions from his humble start as a media-hungry professor at University of Toronto to his current gig of taking over the world. I'll give a quick summary of the saga from the start for people who maybe have moved on to other things or didn't catch it in the first place. And it's interesting because I'm old now to see these things come from nowhere. Jordan Peterson has 8.74 million YouTube followers. That is more than twice as many followers as CBC News. Mm. So it's quite something for me to look back on the origins of this when he was just an unknown professor. And if I'm really starting at the beginning, this is something that I learned from a listener who sent us an email at one point. And I mean, this might fall under the category of gossip. It's not something that I've gone out and confirmed or reported. I'm not sure how you would. But it's an anecdote. And the anecdote was that within the Department of Psychology at the University of Toronto, they were always getting media requests for experts.
Mm.
And the department really wanted professors and psychologists to go on the media. It's free advertising for the department and helps the stature of the department. But the academics who worked there, the professors at University of Toronto and the Department of Psychology, almost always turned down the offer because these were serious researchers and academics who'd say, I'm not an expert on whatever the media cares about today, the psychological implications of Pokemon. Like, I actually have a much more narrow focus than that. But there was always one psychologist who would go on,
yes,
no matter what it was, who just wanted the attention, and that was Jordan Peterson.
And joining us now, Jordan Peterson, professor of psychology at the University of Toronto. And Jordan, it's always good to have you on TVO. Thanks for coming back tonight. Well, in the fallout from all this financial business in the United States, we've been hearing and reading that the collapse of Wall Street actually comes down to one word, and that word is trust. At the end of the day, is this a story about trust?
Well, it seems to me that it's a story about two things. I mean, one thing is, I think it's a story about rapid change.
It's interesting you bring this up because actually one of my YouTuber buddies is working on a video about Jordan Peterson, if you could imagine such a thing, a video essay about Jordan Peterson, I know. But anyway, I was helping them do some research and I was looking through newspapers.com, you know, searching for Jordan Peterson, seeing basically like any pre-2015 reference to Jordan Peterson. And you're absolutely right. It was always those kinds of things. It's experts say owning a dog can be good for mental health. Dr. Jordan Peterson of the University of Toronto had this to say, right? It was always that kind of stuff. Nothing about politics, just always this kind of fluff, self-promotional, pop psychology type of stuff.
I appreciate that. You've lent some degree of substantiation to the anecdote that I shared. So that's who he was up to a certain point, and he was a practicing psychologist. And then I remember, because it was a former Canada Land reporter, a guy named Sean Craig, who was the first to break in mainstream media, as I recall, the pronoun debate, which was a really limited little controversy on campus, that he was refusing instructions to refer to students by their chosen pronouns. And that was a piece that Sean Craig wrote for the National Post. And as far as I understand, it's one of the biggest stories the Post has ever had. It just went bonkers. That plus an appearance on The Agenda.
Bill C-16 and the associated policy statements on the Ontario Human Rights Commission, which I read and was not very happy about. And also because the University of Toronto decided to make so-called anti-racism and anti-bias training mandatory.
Have you taken that training yet?
No way. Not a chance. Okay.
In this very small Canadian sphere in which I operate, where I know, you know, used to work at TVO and been on The Agenda, and then I got Sean Craig. It's just like some guy who they would have on or write an article about, and then it went bigger than any academic has ever gone. It went twice as big as the CBC in terms of his following. He sold over 10 million copies of his first book. And a global level of celebrity followed that I think almost killed him. He found himself addicted to clonazepam and drying out in some weird facility, I think in Russia.
Yeah.
Addicted to meat as well. Now, he was on this all-meat diet. I don't mean to sound bitter about it. I think fame of that level, sudden fame, would almost crush anybody. And then he seemed to get back on his feet. I remember reading about how the National Post was forging some sort of business partnership with him. He kept an office at Post Media, and we were all watching to see what's going to happen here. But I think he made the calculation that he's a bigger media company than Post Media. I don't know what his thinking was, but that never seemed to come to pass. He continued to write for the National Post, but there was no big venture. Follow this trajectory of massive speaking tours, global touring, incredible amount of content output, just pumping out tons of stuff, show after show, and launching ventures like this university.
Oh, yeah. Peterson Academy, right?
Let's discuss what we're doing with Peterson Academy.
We thought, what if we could make getting a degree 95% less expensive? Because that's a pretty funny target. It's like, we're going to undercut you by 95% and offer a better quality experience along the way. Why wouldn't it be good to provide everybody, at least in principle, with access to the best lectures? You know, you might.
This is relatively recent, launched in 2024. Again, if I can't make it in the academy anymore, I'm going to take my body. I'm going to start my own academy. He is offering university caliber education accessible to the masses. Just $499 US per year. That is a very affordable tuition with no degree and no diploma. But he claimed to have 47,000 students as of spring 2025. His daughter, Michaela, was the CEO. But there were problems. The site launched, according to the Toronto Star, with a Netflix-like offering of video-based classes that has grown to include topics like boy crisis, brain plasticity, and Peterson's own flagship offering on German philosopher Friedrich Nietzsche. The courses are roughly 8 hours long, reinforced with AI-generated multiple-choice quizzes, largely male, often right-leaning group of writers and academics. The last we heard, the school was expelling students who questioned surprise price hikes. Jordan Peterson's free speech ideology drew them to his online academy, reported the Star. Then they were expelled for speaking out. So my read on this was that he was capitalizing on this brand and branching out as a massive content figure in every way that you could monetize that, but to diminishing returns and to increased controversies. And his second book sold a fraction of the first books. And if you track him through things like Google searches, the public's interest in him, still massive, but was waning. And he's an old guy or an older guy, and it's a punishing thing to be constantly traveling the globe and giving speeches and the amount of content he had to put out. And I was wondering, like, is he just going to ride this Peterson media brand out, which he's already probably worth over $100 million. Like, he's working like a dog. And so we got curious about what Peterson, the American, is up to these days. Have you been following his new project? Have you been following ARC?
The sort of right-wing WEF, I think, is how it's sometimes been pitched, right?
I think he's defined it as such, as this is the answer to the WEF. This is the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship. Here is how he described it to Joe Rogan a couple of years ago.
I set up an international consortium based in London. I can't tell you all the details yet, but we're trying to put together something like an alternative vision of the future, say an alternative to that kind of apocalyptic narrative that's being put forward, at least implicitly, by organizations like the WEF, you know, and that's the virginal planet, rapacious tyrant, you know, all-devouring consumer religion.
Yeah, we all know. It's the virginal planet, rapacious tyrant, devouring consumer religion. Not his thing, not ARC. This is his own conference. There's been some great reporting on this from our friends over at Canada's National Observer, working with DSmog. They sent some reporters to the first ARC conference, and they did a podcast that we ran on our feed called The Takeover about it. Worth your time.
Welcome aboard the ARC.
I can feel there's excitement in the room. I just feel confused. Like I've stumbled into a club where everyone knows the purpose, the goals, the plans, everyone but me.
It was really interesting to see. This was like putting together power brokers, much like the WEF does. But on the other side of things, U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson, ARC founder Baroness Philippa Stroud. I don't get to talk about baronesses enough on this.
Nothing speaks for the common man like a baroness.
You need a good baroness in the mix. U.S. Energy Secretary Chris Wright, Vivek Ramaswamy, Australia's Deputy Prime Minister John Anderson, Barry Weiss was there. On and on, Peter Thiel, Neil Ferguson. From Canada, Candace Bergen, Jason Kenney, Member of Parliament Leslyn Lewis. And what do they do over there at this conference? They look at building a different narrative than the climate change narrative. They look at responsible citizenship, the social fabric, and the family. I guess a return to family values. Free enterprise and good governance. Energy, economics, and the environment. Identity in a digital age. His focus is on policy. His focus is no longer on trying to change the world through the hearts and minds of the people. In addition to continuing to doing that, he is trying to influence policymakers. And I believe him. I don't think that this is a cash grab. I think he's trying to change the world.
Yeah, it's a sort of true believer ideological project, isn't it? Hearing you describe it, it's revealing as well. Just to get back to, I suppose, the Canada angle, is the degree to which Jordan Peterson clearly now sees himself as a kind of transnational, sort of transcendent figure, right? Like mm-hmm. He's hobnobbing with top people from the States, from Australia, from England, as well as this country, right? It's this kind of like broad kind of like West that he identifies with. It's like an Anglo-West, but like a West. Like this is the core of the civilized world, and I myself am one of the ideological sort of leaders of this world. And thus, when you have ambitions that are that grandiose, you can't achieve them in just crummy old Toronto, Jesse. You clearly have to, you know, be part of the jet set and be a man of no fixed address in order to fight the globalists, right?
This is how you show the Ontario College of Psychologists. No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that he is putting his clout, his base, his name towards, let's deal with this at the highest level possible. Let's talk to the policymakers. And he's been explicit about this. This is what ARC is about, according to Peterson. It is there, quote, to put policies in place that would support long-term, stable, monogamous families. No thruples are okay.
I was reading some reporting where Jordan Peterson was on stage with Nigel Farage, the British Brexit leader, and Farage was even like visibly uncomfortable where he was like, well, you know, I have been married several times, doctor.
Well, I may not necessarily be the best advocate for monogamous heterosexuality or stable marriage.
Yeah, he says this. This is for stable monogamous families, two-parent families, child-centered families. That this is there to advocate for policies that are going to benefit them, whether or not doing something about global warming might benefit their kids. No, that's a conspiratorial apocalyptic plot. That if you want to talk about that, you can go to Davos.
But it's interesting, though. It's like that these are all the kind of things he wants to talk about. And frankly, the kinds of things a lot of this kind of class of sort of influencer, conservative influencer wants to talk about are not issues that are particular to any one nation. And in fact, even though they're talking about policy, it's like they're clearly not involved in how policy is actually made in any particular country, which is the sort of gritty lobbying and working with politicians and lawmakers and that kind of stuff. It's instead like positing these kind of big theories about how things should be in topics relating to, you know, family, gender, sex, and race, and gender identity, and all of these kinds of things, right? It's like, that's the kind of stuff that a certain type of person in this interconnected, globalized age, you know, that's how you become big and famous and important. It's like, the country that you originate from doesn't matter. You know, I just mentioned Nigel Farage. He's like a similar kind of guy. It's like, Americans know who he is. He's on Fox News all the time, even though he's British and in theory is a British politician. His resonance is the degree to which he's able to transcend England and be relevant in the broader kind of like English-speaking world. And I think you just see more and more of these sorts of characters starting to emerge, and that's the sort of the paradox of it, is even though they think of themselves as being on the side of nationalism and home and sort of tradition, they are themselves part of this kind of transnational elite that is like hyper-capitalist, hyper-globalist, hyper-indifferent to the significance of borders, and thus they're really of nowhere except for like conservative world, which is this kind of like country that exists only in the minds of the audience.
Dude, that is a terrific point. This is literally like a globalist conspiracy. They'll achieve their goal, which is they perceive the Davos elite and the World Economic Forum as a globalist conspiracy. Their answer is, all right, well, let's get together and put together our own globalist conspiracy. And what they will end up with will be just as detached from actual everyday policymaking as the World Economic Forum, which is used as a boogeyman, but it's really just a getaway for really rich people. It's not meaningless that all of these powerful people get together and have meetings, but it has been imbued with an almost like supernatural level of suspicion that this is where the lizard people get together. And like, in fact, it doesn't matter that much. And I doubt that this is going to matter that much. I think he'll succeed in making a shadow world version of the WEF. I think that's a great point. And I think that you make a great point as well that like, these are fundamentally unserious people when it comes to the daily business of policy, which is not about ideological saber rattling, but it is about actually getting together with people with divergent interests and figuring out a way that you can get something done and having to be diplomatic and measured in your communication. It's a grind to actually deal with the world in practical terms.
I worry a lot about the degree to which these kinds of people serve as bad political role models, bad citizen role models in that sense, because I see this a lot with like young people who think of themselves as being very political. They consume a lot of podcasts and political YouTube channels and that kind of stuff. And maybe through this consumption diet, they become very good at debating what is a woman or something like that, but they don't know anything about the politics of their own country, of their own society, of their own community. They don't know how elections work, how laws get passed, how any of this kind of stuff happens, right? And they're deeply ignorant of history and political history and other aspects of the legal system and all this kind of stuff that you would think is the essence of good citizenship. The essence of good citizenship is something very hyper and very particular, I think. Not just being able to go to London and hear Jordan Peterson and whoever else yap about the culture war stuff. That's just a very small part of life, a small part of politics. And I think that if you consume too much of that kind of stuff, you can suffer under the false impression that you are a good citizen, that you are hyper-literate in politics, when really all you are is fluent in a kind of ideological fandom that I think has very limited applicability to the actual sort of dirty business of democratic politics.
That is our show for today. Thank you for joining me. I can be emailed about anything you heard at jesse@canadaland.com. I read all the emails. JJ, I'm looking now at your YouTube channel, and you have hit a million. Congratulations. Obviously, it's for being on Canada Land. Where can people find your YouTube channel?
Yeah, if you just type in JJ McCullough into YouTube, or what I often tell people to do if they can't figure out how to spell McCullough, if you just type in JJ Canada, my videos will usually pop up.
Why don't you just call yourself JJ Canada?
Yeah, in retrospect, that would have been a better branding move, wouldn't it, then, Jesse? But I've been doing this for 10 years, and I already have a million subs, so...
All right, I hear you. This episode is produced by James Nicholson. The associate producer is Lucy Lomonier. The fact check of today's episode was done by Canada Land's director of audio, Max Collins. Mixing and mastering is by Tristan Capicione. I am the editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca.
This is Mac DeMarco, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby, the Chablis. CJ.